from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Hachette Book Group, one of the world's largest book publishers, and Amazon.com are in the middle of a big fight over ebook prices. Amazon wants a bigger cut of ebook profits, a market they dominate, and they're making Hachette books less available online to pressure the publisher. It's hardball business with implications for readers, writers, and ideas themselves. The internet, it turns out, is putting a lot of power in the hands of a few companies like Amazon. This hour on Point, publishing Amazon. And the future of books. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you taking a side in the Hachette versus Amazon fight? Who's and why? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. A lot of big names in the middle of this. J.K. Rowling, James Patterson, Stephen Colbert. He talked about it last night. His book is among those being hit by this fight. Here he is on the Colbert Report.
I am not the only victim here. Take Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling. Amazon has taken the pre-order buttons off her new Hachette book, The Silkworm, a vicious tactic by Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, or should I say, Lord Bezomore. And this has pushed me past my tipping point, I think, because I'm still waiting for my copy of Hachette author Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point.
Oh, we're going to miss that voice if he doesn't keep it up when he goes to Letterman's slot. Stephen Colbert there last night. Joining me first today from New York is Jeffrey Trachtenberg, reporter for The Wall Street Journal, covering book publishing. Jeffrey, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
So, Lord Bezomore, what has Amazon been up to with Hachette Books? What are the tactics that have had them described as playing hardball, heavy-handed, and all the rest on the site when it comes to finding or buying Hachette Books in this fight?
So there are basically three things which Amazon has done. They've made it impossible for you to pre-order a Hachette title.
Is that a big deal?
It is a big deal, especially for authors who are hoping to get their books onto the bestseller list.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a pre-order, the way it works is all the pre-orders are grouped together and then they go through at one time.
Boom.
So if you've accumulated a lot of pre-orders that first day, your book has a much better chance of making the bestseller list.
Okay. So there's one. What else has Jeff Bezos done here?
So they've also done something with some of the older Hachette titles where if you look for a book, you may see that it says, currently out of stock, will ship in 2 to 4 weeks, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they may also, at the same time, offer you other titles you may be interested in since there's a delay on shipping the book you originally looked for.
Okay, and?
And they've done an interesting thing which is they've often reduced the discount that they're offering to their customers on Hachette titles. So where you might once have seen a 30 or 40% discount, now you might see a 10 or nothing.
You put all that together, it does sound like pretty hardball tactics. What's going on here, Jeffrey?
So I would just say sometimes if you can step back, it's a negotiating stance. It's something we saw last year between Barnes & Noble and Simon & Schuster. They had a disagreement over terms. Barnes & Noble wanted more. Simon & Schuster didn't want to give as much as Barnes & Noble wanted. So Barnes & Noble made it harder to buy Simon & Schuster books in its stores, and that also affected Simon & Schuster authors. And that dispute went on for a very long time, basically from January through August.
Of course, Barnes & Noble's is a shrinking factor in this market. Borders is gone. There were, 7,000 independent bookstores? There are 2,000 today. Amazon's grip, especially on ebooks, very big. They've got something like 60% of the market. So when they play hardball, maybe it's a bigger deal.
Yes, I think that's correct. And I think that's the subtext here, is that people are concerned about Barnes & Noble, which is not going out of business and which generates a lot of money in cash flow. But they are shrinking their consumer store base, and people are worried about that. And they see at the same time that Amazon has increased its share, not only of digital books, which you're probably right, probably around 60% on the ebook side, but also of physical books sold online. So they're just a much bigger a part of the market. They may be 35-40% of all consumer trade books today.
Jeffrey, there's a backstory here, which is complicated, but we need to know a little bit about it. I mean, Amazon came on with the Kindle, really dominated ebooks for a time, had 90% of that market for a while. Apple came in, publishers rallied around Apple, they got a better deal with Apple, but then they got slapped on the wrist on more by the Justice Department for colluding in pricing. How is that ramp set up this situation?
So without getting into all the details, we could simply say that when Apple, before Apple would come into the market and agree to sell ebooks on its upcoming new iPad, they wanted a pricing structure that would, in effect, mirror the pricing structure they have for other products. That is, they get 30% of the price, and the manufacturer gets the other 70%. Mm-hmm. And the manufacturer sets the price, and Apple simply acts as an agent and sells it for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a completely different model from the old model of book publishing, in which publishers set the wholesale price and retailers set the consumer price.
Now, they got pushed off that by the Justice Department, Hachette, and other publishers, right?
Yes, and here's the important aspect of that. When publishers set the retail price, it means they decide whether a book can be discounted. Amazon has built its market share on discounting. So Amazon did not like the new Apple arrangement that affected the major publishers because it meant they couldn't discount without permission. And that's why their market share began to fall.
Right.
Because suddenly prices were more stable. So you could buy the same book at virtually the same price on Apple or Google or Barnes & Noble or any other ebook retailer. So it took away some of the pricing advantage that Amazon had captured by discounting.
What does it mean for the big publishers if Amazon wins here, whatever that means?
Well, that's a fair question, and that's what it's so murky. And again, this is a dispute over trade terms, and eventually it will be settled, and business will continue. But what it likely means is, depending on the terms, that publishers may have to give up some of their margin and may have to make some decisions on discounting as well. That's what's at issue here, is who's going to how will the digital ebook pie be sliced up, and what will the consumer experience be like? Will they see a lot of discounting or not?
And, of course, who's publishing, who's bringing books to market, who's deciding what gets printed ultimately and what doesn't, who's deciding what gets featured and what doesn't. Jeffrey Trachtenberg covers the publishing world for The Wall Street Journal. Joined us from New York. Jeffrey, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
With me now in the studio, Ben Edelman, professor at Harvard Business School, focuses on internet business from regulation to consumer protection. He's written about how businesses can deal with internet giants like Amazon and Google in the Harvard Business Review. Ben Edelman, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, back in the day, you can't imagine Amazon doing this. When they began, it was all books, and they were going to sell books, and they needed the publishers. The worm has turned here.
Indeed, it has.
In book publishing and a lot of other arenas. They have tremendous power here. Is this an example of how the internet has, you know, we thought of it as this democratizing medium, but maybe it's a power concentrating medium?
The internet has been pretty handy for intermediaries wanting to shore up their power. It's not just Amazon at all. Probably first on most people's minds these days is Google. Google, pretty powerful. If you want to be found or you want to sell something, you've got to go through them. The terms that they extract, the bully-style tactics, certainly people make even more serious allegations there than they do about Amazon.
So it may be about access to information or a website on Google. It may be about access to products. Amazon sells everything. Now, this is about books, which comes down in some ways to ideas and the cases being made out there that if you don't have strong publishers, you're going to have Amazon running the whole show. It will only care about what sells and sells big, and so you get Hunger Games and romantic novels, nothing against them, but that will dominate. That literature itself will be hit here.
I'm not sure about that. You know, Amazon is fortunate in that they can stock virtually an unlimited number of books compared to a physical retailer with a limited amount of floor space. Amazon can stock everything. They don't mind necessarily selling 10 copies of 100,000 books rather than a million copies of one book. It's all the same to them, and indeed, they get a comparative advantage when they're selling lots of obscure stuff compared to the in-store experience that really needs a few popular titles.
Well, look at that ultimate dynamic. Ben, stand by. Roxana Robinson joins us from New York, president of the Authors Guild, author of Sparta, Sweetwater, and many others. Roxana Robinson, welcome back to On Point. Nice to hear from you.
Hello, Tom. Nice to be here.
You're calling Amazon a big bad bully. Why?
Yeah, that's the way Amazon is declaring itself. It's acting like Tony Soprano. These are threats, and their very very hostile and antagonistic behavior. It doesn't really bode well for a kind of mutual a partnership based on mutual trust and cooperation. They're treating their partners like enemies.
Well, we heard our Wall Street Journal suggest, look, it's business. Business is tough. You know, it's a roller derby out there. No big deal. Happens in all businesses.
Well, I'd say that the publishing industry has always been based on trust and cooperation. And until Amazon and this internet kind of distribution arrived, authors and publishers were partners, and one couldn't survive without the other. And there was always squabbling about who got a larger share, but still they were in partnership, and it's long-term partnerships that benefit each part of the partnership and benefit the overall culture and economy. It's not a good business model to be attacking your partners.
Are you surprised that Hachette has stood up so vigorously here for so long to some pretty tough tactics by Big Amazon?
I'm really pleased that they have, and I also have the feeling that these are really serious matters, that the publishers may have been forced to the wall here and feel that they may not be able to survive in the market if they give in to make these concessions. And there's no reason to think Amazon would stop here. If they feel that they can get away with it, why wouldn't they keep on pushing indefinitely?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Amazon.com's battle with the book publishers and what it means for the future of readers, writers, publishers, and ideas. Right now, Amazon's fighting with Hachette over who gets paid what for e-books. There's a bigger tension here. Ben Edelman joins us in the studio, professor at Harvard Business School, pays a lot of attention to the scale of internet companies and how smaller companies do and can deal with that. Roxana Robinson is with us. She's president of the Authors Guild, author of Sparta and Sweetwater. You know, Roxana, Amazon says right on the website, we're not making this Hachette book so easy to get, but here are options. You can read these other books if it's too much trouble for you to get a Hachette book through us. What's the problem?
It's really interesting that Amazon says that, because it demonstrates a really fundamental problem in terms of having them in control of the literary industry, because it shows that they think that books are commodities. Books are not commodities. One thing they did with the Hachette books is to arbitrarily raise the price of one book and then put a banner next to it saying, here's another cheaper book on the same subject. Well, books are not interchangeable. If you want to read War and Peace, there's no other Russian novel about the 19th century that will take the place of War and Peace. So Amazon is just completely out to lunch here.
You know, our listeners responding in all kinds of interesting ways. On the one hand, Hefei says, Amazon, the Walmart of online sales, culture seems to be one of fear. It's funny, that wasn't their reputation. But in this, they may be losing a PR battle. But Jeff writes to us, won't these tactics lead to lower prices for the customer in the end? I mean, seriously, he writes, why are we still paying $10 plus for books that don't have a physical presence? Ben Edelman, is this the Walmart debate all over again? Amazon will bring down prices and they'll run the market, and ultimately good for consumers even if you don't like the backstory.
I'm sympathetic to consumers who want a better deal. You look at the price of ebooks, certainly the price is far from marginal cost. It doesn't cost anything to make it. A whole lot of folks in tough businesses incur greater capital expense to produce their intellectual property and then sell it for less than ebooks. So one does look at authors and say, in that sense, authors have had it pretty nice for a while and shouldn't think themselves entitled to keep that in the long run.
Roxana, you've had such a cushy life, you authors. Get over
it. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the royalties for ebooks. They're roughly half what the royalties are for real books. And the fact is that since this transition has occurred from hardcover, from real books, tangible books, to ebooks, authors are losing that proportionate amount in royalties with every sale. So then we turn to what the publishers are doing here. The Authors Guild supports Hachette and its face-off with Amazon, but we would also like to raise this issue of royalties. First of all, publishers still have to do all the work that they have to do on a book, whether it's an ebook or a tangible book. They have to edit it, copy edit it, market it, and all of that is man hours. That's labor. So when the book comes out as an ebook, it still represents that initial investment. But the royalties, authors are not pleased about, because we're being squeezed just the way Amazon is trying to squeeze the publishers. We're being squeezed by the publishers.
Where does that go in the end? When the music industry changed and musicians could no longer make as much from selling record albums or CDs, they went out on the road and do lots of tours for big money. Some of them, in, you know, a big stadium can bring in a lot of cash. An author goes out for a bookstore reading. In the bookstores that remain, Roxana, that's not exactly a big margin evening.
It's not the way to earn your living. Nobody pays to come and hear a writer give a reading.
Let me go to Roger in Oklahoma City. Roger, thanks for calling. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. First of all, I'm definitely opposed to Amazon on this, but I'm a professor, and I've got to make this a teachable moment, okay?
Okay, let's hear it.
This has happened time after time throughout history. It happened in oil. It happened in steel. Before that, it happened with the railroads. Then it happened with the auto industry. A new industry starts. It takes off great guns. A couple of large vendors get bigger and bigger, and for a time that's good. You know, product variety goes up, prices go down, everyone benefits. Then they get too big, and they start throwing their weight around. And it's happening now on Amazon. I work for an online university, so we have a lot of skin in the online game. We're interested in this.
Yep.
But, you know, my point is that what's the solution? The solution is, can anybody say government regulation? Everybody hates that. I'm open to a better solution. Anybody got one?
That raises the antitrust question. Roxana, you're saying the word right there. Ben, how about it? I mean, Sony was big in ebooks, but Amazon's so dominant, and Amazon sells so many other things other than books. They can make their money on garden tools, and Sony's kind of pulling out. Kobo, the Canadian upstart, same with them. They really can't match. Amazon sells everything, as Jeff Bezos loves to say, so they can go very low on book prices. What about our caller from Oklahoma City and his point here that Amazon can drive others out? Looks great, but once they're driven out, they can do whatever they like here, and there should be antitrust consideration.
I think the caller is right to point out the need for some government oversight. Whether it needs to be antitrust, I'd tend to begin with consumer protection law. It seems to me if Amazon says a book is, quote, unavailable, there might be some real meaning to that term. Unavailable doesn't just mean we choose not to make it available.
Right.
It means there's some objective, actual circumstance that prevents us from making it available. And if that's not true, then Amazon shouldn't say it. Let's start with truth in labeling, consumer deception, and only after we've exhausted all of those remedies, proceed to the big guns of antitrust.
Roxana, I don't imagine you're an antitrust lawyer, but maybe you are. What about the antitrust path here? The consumer protection path, do you feel like you or publishers need protection from this giant?
We certainly have been looking at this and talking about it. It's not something, obviously, that we can do ourselves, but we understand that Amazon brought the white paper to the Department of Justice, and that's what led to the publishers and Apple being sued by the government. And we're looking at this, and they're taking over a larger and larger share of the market. They're practicing predatory price raising and fixing. They're behaving in a vindictive and threatening and intimidating manner. It's hard to say when they say they're doing this for the consumer. It's hard to say that with a straight face when you are arbitrarily raising prices, removing books from your store, and not talking to the publishers about why you're not stocking them. These are all moves that are absolutely detrimental to the customer.
Let's go to Diane in Omaha, Nebraska. Diane, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. Mm-hmm. This is something that I've been following for years. I was in scholarly publishing at one time. And I have to say, in response to Roxana, Hachette and Bertelsmann, in their consolidation of the publishing industry in the 90s and so on, did more to damage and to commodify books.
So it's not just online where there's consolidation.
Absolutely, and what Amazon is doing is really kind of the death knell, I think, of of publishing. Books are not commodities, as the fellow in Oklahoma would have you believe. They are what we learn from.
I don't think he was pushing them as commodities, but...
he wasn't, but he was making the corollary that this happened in the oil industry, this happened in steel, this happened in... Well, books aren't steel.
But let's say Amazon became very powerful. What's the problem there, Diane? They, as Ben Edelman says, online you can offer everything. There's no limit to shelf space. Now, there are deals about what gets featured, but shouldn't they be able to represent everything that gets done in the publishing world online? Why would it turn books into commodities?
My bookstores here mm-hmm. in Omaha and your bookstores there in Boston can offer absolutely everything that's published. They just don't have it in stock. They can certainly order it.
Well, but so could Amazon, I guess. But I take your point. Watch out for the commodification of books. Ben Edelman, what about the argument that that's what lies at the end of the road here? You say, well, there's no reason for that because they can offer everything. But they don't have to feature everything. And if they cut their margins very low, maybe to drive out other booksellers online, will the publishers have the resources even to go out and cultivate those authors and books that might not be big sellers?
One certainly worries about changes in the business model. We've seen that in the music business, as you pointed out, record companies putting less investment into fewer recording artists, sending fewer guys to the studios to make first albums and unprofitable first tours. It's possible, at least in the writing business, that some people will find other ways to make the numbers work. You'll write at night while you have a day job, or do it while a professor collect manuscripts that you've put together in some other context. It's not that it's an easy job. No one said this was going to be easy, but the internet has this way of destroying comfortable businesses and even uncomfortable businesses, making them an awful lot harder. And I worry, as much as authors have struggled to date, it's probably going to get harder before it gets easier.
I mean, Roxana, there are all the famous stories of the great novels, you know, written while somebody was at work. Is that the future? You're going to work at the power company while you write the next great American novel?
We're hoping that that's not going to be the case. And like the caller from Omaha, we don't think that all the publishing houses banding together is any better than Amazon becoming larger and larger. And as the earlier caller suggested, it may be time for antitrust laws to be brought to bear here. What's happening on the internet is, you know, as we all know, there's this rallying cry, which is information wants to be free, which is a kind of a strange notion, because what it's raised to discuss is actually books. And books are not just random information. They're not figures that you can get about the weather or the temperature. It's intellectual property. It has real value, and it should not be free, and it should never be free. So writers should be compensated for what they contribute to the culture, and that's always been a struggle, honestly. No culture has ever celebrated writers the way they celebrate, the inventor of the tractor. But in this case, we're watching very carefully to see what's going to happen. You know, there are different business models. In Germany, for example, as I understand it, it's illegal to discount books. So nobody discounts books. So authors actually get a fair pay for their work.
Ben Edelman's nodding his head that's true. I must say, no discount sounds kind of, I don't know what, un-internet-ish or even un-American in the Walmart era. Stand by, Roxana. I want to welcome into our conversation from New York, Porter Bibb, managing partner of corporate finance for MediaTek Capital Partners. 40 years experience investing, spent a lot of time in media, entertainment. Was the first publisher of Rolling Stone magazine. Porter Bibb, thanks very much for joining us.
Great to be here, Tom.
You're not too sympathetic with publishers, maybe not even with authors in this. Why not, Porter?
Well, I'm an author myself, and as an author, I have to say that I really, really, really don't like what the publishers are doing, trying to prevent discounting of any books, and I do like what Amazon is doing. My books mostly are out of print right now, but you can go on Amazon and you can get used copies delivered to your front door in 2 days. no publisher cares about the backlist of the books that I and hundreds, if not thousands, of other authors have written that are not household names.
Do you make a penny when I buy that used book on Amazon, Porter?
Absolutely. I get my commission from Amazon.
Whether it's used or not?
Yes.
So what about the argument that if Amazon gains too much market share and power here, we will inexorably see some portion of authors and therefore ideas driven out of the market?
I'm not sure that that's in Amazon's or anybody's interest, and I certainly don't think it's likely to happen based on the way that Amazon has operated its business in all other industry and product categories. I blame the publishers because they're multi-billion dollar businesses. They're like the record companies 12, 15 years ago who saw the change in the market environment, didn't do anything about it. The record companies started suing their customers, which is probably the cardinal sin of consumer marketing.
You mean for swiping music off the web?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The book publishers could easily have, instead of colluding and trying to get together with Amazon and set up a much higher price structure, which the courts knocked down, they could have gone into the same e-book business that Amazon is doing and set up their own shop. They don't do that. They're staying with the hard copies because that's where it's still a $20 billion business, a little bit more than twice as big as the e-book business. E-books are growing very fast. The margins are phenomenal. And the UK just announced a major breakthrough in 2015. E-books will outsell hard copy books in the United Kingdom. Sooner or later, that will happen here as well.
But Porter, if those e-books, they may have good margins, but still, if they don't spin off the cash that publishers are used to, who's going to support the whole business of writing and even literature? Authors can't exactly go out on concert tour like the Rolling Stones.
No, the margins of e-books are significantly more profitable, and notwithstanding all of the effort, energy, and expense it costs to generate a book in the first place. But the Roxana ought to be talking to the publishers about improving the royalties that authors get because they're based on the retail price. Primarily, and the retail price of e-books is always going to be much lower than the hard copy price. Amazon's got a floor of $9.99, and if you're an author and you're getting a royalty on $9.99 versus $25 or $30, you're not going to make as much money. So that's up to the Authors Guild, the agents, and the writers themselves to do something about.
Well, that's easy to say, but there's not much left in the kitty if you're talking margins on $9.99 versus $29.99. Roxana?
Well, Porter, I did just say that we are unhappy with the publishers, and we are making claims about these royalties on e-books. It's kind of outrageous the way they have dropped the level of royalties. But I also want to ask you how in the world you get Amazon to pay you for used books. That certainly doesn't happen to me or anyone else I know. The other thing about Amazon's sale of used books is they put them on the same page as the new book, so it makes it much less likely that a new buyer is going to want the new hardcover when they can buy a used book for $2. But they also raise them arbitrarily. I know a writer in England, Brian Appleyard, and I looked up one of his books that came out just a few years ago, and on Amazon it's $200.
Roxana, stand by. Porter, I know we have to let you go. I'm sorry for that. Porter Bibb, thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Amazon.com's battle with book publishers, what it means for the future of readers, writers, publishers, ideas. Right now, Amazon fighting with Hachette over who gets paid what for ebooks, ramifications beyond their head-to-head here, which has been a pretty tough one. Amazon using some pretty tough tactics. Hachette books have been hard to find on the gigantic seller of everything, as Jeff Bezos says, including more books than anybody else these days. Ben Edelman is with us from the Harvard Business School. Roxana Robinson is here, president of the Authors Guild. They've got a big stake in this fight. Julie's calling from Arlington, Massachusetts. Julie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask that you remind people that the power of their purse and the power of their actions. So you can give Amazon and Walmart and Google and Apple all the power you want, or you can choose to do other things. You can search on Good Search. You know, you can purchase things at small stores. You can get books at the library and use books and other merchants. You don't have to buy from the big guys because it's the most convenient or you might think the cheapest. You need to do the right thing.
And yet we've seen thousands of bookstores go away, Borders go away entirely, Barnes & Noble's with less presence than it had before. I mean, do you think, Julie, people, if you can do it right there online, are people really going to, you know, get in the car, spend the time, spend the gas, all the rest?
Or even a different e-store. It doesn't have to be Amazon. You have to spend a little bit more time and search some other places and buy it from someone else. There's a lot of small booksellers out there.
Use your range of opportunities. Is that what happens, Ben Edelman, or do the big just get bigger on the web?
Often we've seen that the big get bigger. If you need to know the phone number for the fire department, you can't remember it, and you get 1 second to make one search, I recommend Google. If it's 1% better 1% of the time, sometimes, one being free, the other being free, you might as well use it. If some competitor would offer you a lower price on books, a lot of customers would switch to that. But the reality has been Amazon seems to have a cost advantage, and it's hard to find the customer who's willing to pay extra to support a small online business. There might be some, and maybe it's you, but I wouldn't hold my breath for too many.
Could we just settle the used book business? Porter was saying he makes something off it, but that would be a very peculiar circumstance, or particular, wouldn't it?
In general, authors don't get anything when their books are sold used by Amazon. Some people, myself included, have websites that link to Amazon. If you go to my website and click through to Amazon, then I get about 6% no matter what you buy. Mm-hmm. If you buy a book I wrote or if you buy a vacuum cleaner, I get 6%. But that's not really distinctive to a book or a used book.
Roxana, there's one way. Get vacuum cleaner buyers to come through author websites. No problem. Jay in Des Moines, Iowa. Jay, you're on the air. Hello, Jay.
Hi,
are you there?
Tom, it's Jay.
Hi.
Hello, Tom. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. You're on.
This is Dave, Tom. I'm an Amazon author, and I just love it. I think it's a bunch of sour grapes. Tom, last weekend I had a promotion, and it got up to, I think, 72,000 on the Amazon list, and I was contacted by a publisher who I formerly sent a manuscript saying that they'd be interested in me, and they don't remember me at all, but I remember them. I mean, when an author, even if they get a first novel out there, you're not going to see any profit on that book till it sells about 100,000 copies, and they're only going to spend about $3,000 on you to advertise you if they spend that. So what Amazon does for me is put all the power in me as an author, and I can, I've done readings at bookstores and they carry the hard copy.
So, Dave, let me be clear. Are you self-publishing through Amazon? Is that what you're up to?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've just done a complete in run around all the publishing industry. And to me, it just sounds like sour grapes.
How are you doing on the money side, Dave, in that capacity?
It's starting. My book, The Mayhem Wrangler, came out last December. And it's been slowly building. It's kind of a niche book.
Have you made $100?
I've made way over $100. And you know, I'm that guy that works his day job and writes his novels into the wee hours of the morning after he puts his kids to bed. And I sent manuscripts out for 6 years, Tom, and I couldn't find a bite. And now they're coming to me because the numbers. So if they say they are in love with the written word and the author is almighty, they don't budge until they see the numbers either. So
yeah,
it's kind of like, it's not David and Goliath. It's kind of like Rock'em Sock'em Robots, I say. And for once, I win.
The next William Faulkner there, working and writing with the Mayhem Wrangler. Dave, thanks for your call. Roxana, we've got a lot of callers here from Baton Rouge, from Lake Worth, who seem to be pointing to the same thing. This is Amazon's a way for people to avoid publishers entirely. Just get up there on their own self-published hook and go.
Here's the thing. Amazon makes itself very appealing under those circumstances. But the point is, if you publish directly through Amazon, you have no agent. You have no one protecting you. You have no one examining the contract. And Amazon can change the rules whenever they want. I've heard that Amazon offered very high royalties at one point and then suddenly dropped them, and the authors have no recourse because they've signed a contract that says Amazon can change the terms.
Mm-hmm.
I've also heard from Amazon authors who say that they started getting threatening messages from Amazon saying, what are you doing to promote your book? If you're not doing enough, we're not going to put it up on our website. It will be removed from Amazon. So the point is, you can have a great run, and it sounds as though this guy, the Mayhem Wrangler, is having a great run, but it doesn't mean that he has found a solid and reliable business partner. Amazon isn't in the publishing industry. They are in the delivery industry. So there's a big difference, and he may have a good moment right now, but there's no way to think that that's going to continue. He has no reason to believe that.
No, none of the comfort of that two-three martini lunch in Manhattan to tide you over to the next book. Scott in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Scott, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks.
Yeah.
It's simply capitalism taking its form and running its course. You know, when the main book publishers were in control of the authors, the book publishers weren't saying, oh, you know, your book is a really thought-inspiring book. I'm going to publish it. If it wasn't going to make them a certain amount of money, they were not going to publish your book. And they've lost that control because they didn't evolve with the technology, with the markets, the way they were trending. And now Amazon's taken over, and they can throw their weight around. They throw their weight around too much, other things will pop up and take their places. You know, the book manufacturer, book publishers, they could write their own app and distribute their books with their app and completely cut out Amazon from the middle.
Hey, Scott, let me pick that piece up right there, if I may, Ben. That Amazon behaves too heavy-handedly, throw their weight around too much, and somebody else will pop up and take it away from them. I mean, maybe so. That's supposed to be the capitalist way. Is it equally true with the dynamics of scale that come into the internet business? Or do they have more leverage to throw, more margin to throw their weight around?
I think it's true in the long run that an intermediary that is unduly abusive and unduly meddling will get called out for that behavior and ultimately will find competitors popping up. But there's a lot you can do in the short run. I'm reminded of a dispute between American Airlines and Expedia in fall 2010, winter 2011. Expedia was mad at American Airlines for not paying the booking fees they wanted, mm-hmm. so they put all the American Airlines flights at the bottom. And a lot of people just didn't notice. You want to fly from New York to L.A.? There are United flights, JetBlue, American.
American just suffered.
They just suffered. They were down there at the bottom. Ultimately, Expedia and also Sabre, the reservation system, mm-hmm. they had to pay hundreds of millions of dollars in fines and penalties in litigation. But along the way, they could put American down at the bottom, and a lot of people didn't notice.
Amazon can have that same power. It's proving that to Hachette right now. Tim in Lake Worth, Florida. Tim, you're on.
Hi, thank you very much for taking that call. I want to praise Amazon.
Okay.
I spent 10 years writing a book, and I sent it to many publishers. They did have the courtesy to return the book or a letter, and I heard about CreateSpace, a division of Amazon, for $1,000. They put together a beautiful 300-page book with a fantastic cover. Put it right on Amazon. I promote it by way of my website. I'm coming out with my second book, which will be out in about 6 weeks.
But Tim, let me get this straight. In this relationship, just to get this straight, you're paying Amazon, not the other way around, at least so far.
Well, I'm paying Amazon, but I got a book. It's more than the money with me, okay? Mm-hmm. I have a message, and I'm proud of my book. If I have to pay to get it published, that's fine, because I spent so much time doing it. But I think people put too much emphasis on the money and not enough emphasis on what the authors have to say. And this Amazon gives you an excellent opportunity to get your book out there, get it published, make it professional, and I've sold a lot of copies, gotten great feedback.
Hey, Tim, I appreciate your call. And listen, I admire your passion, and I know many authors who have felt something similar along the way and didn't have options. Roxana, how about it? If you care so much about your work, pay Amazon to put it out there.
That has always been the case. That's called vanity publishing, and there have always been vanity publishers that would take a manuscript and turn it into a book, and the author pays for it. It's very different from the publishing industry that views the manuscript in different terms. Of course, the publishers want to make money from a book. That's why they can stay in business. But traditionally, publishers would sell the first book, would produce the first book by an author and expect not to make very much money, but support that author and support the next book and so forth, and so that they were building and supporting an author's work. The idea in a culture like ours is not that writers should have to have other jobs and take 10 years to write one book and then pay for it themselves. The idea is that we value literature, we value writers, we value ideas, we welcome them into the culture, and we have a publishing industry that is based, is meant to be, it is intends to be based on merit, so that the books that the publishers feel have merit are the ones that they publish. It's very different from going to Amazon and saying, I'll pay you $1,000, produce a book for me.
How do you think it will change what we read and what gets written over time? Tim in Lake Worth may say, well, that's kind of an elite way of deciding what has merit. Let me get my book up there and let readers decide. You can argue that from both sides, but certainly they're different models. If it's a distributor at the helm, not publishers so much, if that's the way we go, Roxana, how do you think that changes the nature of what gets written and read?
It was, you know, Amazon has a completely democratic populist view, and they don't care about literary value. They simply want to sell the book, and they feel the same way about Amazon reviews. Their idea is anyone is qualified to write a review. It doesn't matter if you have been reading this writer's work for years, you understand the culture. It doesn't matter. Anybody who wants to can post a review, and anybody who publishes a book, Amazon will sell. So it is removing the notion of merit from the field of literature.
Ben, would you agree with that? Is the internet age in the form of Amazon here removing merit from the sort of weighing and proliferation of literature?
Well, there's still an assessment of what should come up first when a user types in a search or clicks on murder mystery or what have you. Amazon still needs to make that difficult decision when you make a broad request what to put at the top. You can do it by sales.
Will that be a merit-based decision? And how will they define merit?
Right. They've been doing it by propensity to purchase so far. The view being if the guy buys it and if the reviews indicate he's probably pretty happy with it, then it must be okay.
I mean, I wonder about this. We talked about country music recently on this show and how the character of country music is changing as it also gets more democratic in a way, more driven by what will sell directly. I mean, literature puts a very high prize on merit, and merit is not always the most popular. We know that from music. We certainly know that from literature. Hunger Games sells more than Faulkner year by year, or you name it. Does that put us in a different realm? I mean, is Roxana fighting the tide here, Ben? Does the internet somehow mean that we're going to end up with a populist literary culture?
It's going to be hard to make someone buy a book on Amazon that fundamentally they don't want to buy. If the customer looks at the book and doesn't want to press the add it to my shopping cart button, he's not going to. Amazon.
But in the dream of the great publisher, part of their role was to promote things and make the case to the potential reader that they did want to buy this, even if it didn't appeal to 40 million people.
Right. I think we don't see so much of that from Amazon, as you say. There are bits. Amazon has an editorial staff that picks the best new mysteries this week and puts them right on the mystery page. But one shouldn't think that that's going to be a major source of effort.
Hey, Roxana, here's one of our listeners who writes, so now publishers and authors find themselves in the same conundrum as wage workers. Well, welcome to America, this writer says to us online, and then goes on to talk about revolution. But maybe this is something to do with this century, Roxana, the internet technology driving a different dynamic around culture, including literature.
I honestly don't know what this person is talking about and urging us to revolution. I think that there have always been popular books that have not always been the greatest literature. War and Peace is a perennial bestseller. I mean, I don't know if it's a numerically bestseller, but it will always sell because it's great literature. I mean, the notion that you buy something that you want to read, of course, is what keeps people buying books. It doesn't mean you're going to want to buy every book. I'm not going to want to buy the same books that you do. But what Amazon does, and I believe the publishers participate in this just the way a publisher would pay money to have their book put up at the front of the bookstore for display. I think the same thing happens at Amazon, as I understand it, so that publishers have a deal with Amazon as to what books are seen first. So that's nothing new, but it doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to see only the greatest books of literature showing up.
Who do you think will win this wrestling match, Roxana? Amazon, Hachette, publishers, internet?
All I can say for sure is that we're going to see a lot of change. I don't know where the model is going to end up.
You and everybody else in that boat right now, but it's sure interesting to see this rock'em sock'em action in the realm of literature and book publishing. Roxana Robinson, we really appreciate your being with us, president of the Authors Guild, joining us from New York. Thanks for taking a few minutes to come by, Roxana.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
And Ben Edelman of the Harvard Business School, who looks at the big picture here. Ben, wonderful for you to come in. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for being here. This is On Point.